This is Protect What Matters with Barry Fisher and Susan Blaze, giving you the advice and information on protecting what matters the most in today's world. Phone lines open, 238-5775, 238-KPRL.
Good afternoon. I'm Barry Fisher.
And I'm Susan Blaze.
Welcome to Protecting What Matters, the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life and property. Today's show features Rob Covarrubias, president of Cova Lending. We're going to be talking about commercial and residential lending in this inflationary landscape, and it's going to be a great show today. You're going to learn a whole lot. The other topic for today is funding your long-term care needs. What's your plan? And the idea of this section, this topic, is to talk about controlling your care destiny. I want to say density, but it's really destiny. And so that you get the care you want when you need care, and you also get the quality of care that you want when you need long-term care. Again, you can call in with questions, 805-238-5775. So just a couple of short notes here that I wanted to bring to your attention. I found this great thing, and this is something I think if you're grandparents or parents, you ought to take a look at. It's offered by Prager University. It's financial literacy for sixth graders and up, and it's a great website. These courses are free. We've already sent them to this information to our grandkids, and hopefully they're going to take advantage of it. They have all kinds of topics like what is a budget, what is a savings account, what is investing. And Dennis Prager, who we've actually had the pleasure of meeting a number of years ago, is a really smart guy, and he does a great job with Prager University.
And that's spelled P-R-A-G-E-R, Prager.
Yes, it's got a really long URL. So if you want the direct URL, send us an email at info@blazeandbear.com, and we'll shoot you the URL. I don't want to take the time to read it because it's such a long one. And the other thing I'll mention to you, too, is that sometime after today, we're going to have a whole section on our website for Protecting What Matters, which will include our shows, okay, and also web pages like this, links to web pages that you can access very easily. So again, that's KPRL is 805-238-5775, and it gets info@blazeandbear.com. Now I'd like to introduce Rob Covarrubias. Rob, you with us?
I am here, Barry.
All right. Well, let me give you a proper introduction. The show started about 2 minutes earlier than we expected, so we're good now. So Rob, who many of you know, Rob, he's a fixture really in the Paso Robles area. He graduated from Paso High in 1986, went to Fresno City College in 1988 at the Western Commercial Banking School at the University of Nevada. In 1999, and then he graduated from commercial banking school at SMU in Dallas in 2006. Rob's got a 28-year banking career before starting and again, many of you know him during that time. I know we go back with Rob probably back to 1998, 1999.
At least, yeah.
He started Cova Lending in 2018. Rob's on the board of directors of the Paso Chamber of Commerce, and also a member of the Paso Robles Planning Commission. Rob, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, Barry. Susan, great to be here.
Great to have you here. So you have wide-ranging experience in the local commercial and residential lending markets. Why don't you share some of this with our audience? And we'd like to start with the commercial lending. What's the big picture right now with all these rising interest rates?
Yeah, as most people know, the Feds met last week and increased the prime lending rate again, 0.75 point. So now we're sitting at 7% on the prime lending side. So most people don't know this, but when it comes to commercial lending, there's a couple of different tiers that lenders use to create the interest rate. So they'll use the Wall Street Journal prime rate, which is again at 7%. They'll also use things like the 10-year treasury, 5-year treasury. They'll also use a LIBOR. So there's kind of different methods. And then on top of the On top of that, they'll add a margin. So, for example, on a traditional commercial loan, you might see it, if it's tied to prime, it'll be 7% plus, say, a margin of 1. So the starting rate becomes 8%. One thing you will find with Treasury notes, they are typically lower. You know, for example, a 10-year Treasury is in the low 4s today. But the margins sometimes are a little bit higher. So it might be a 10-year Treasury plus, say, 3%. So then you're at a, you know, 7.25, 7.5 rate to start. So, yeah, so definitely rates are up a little bit. A year ago, the prime lending rate was in the mid to upper 3s.
Jeez.
So we've seen a dramatic increase over the last 12 months.
So it's doubled, really, in just a year.
In just 1 year.
That's crazy, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
So, Rob, what seems to be the hot loan products for business owners right now? And maybe you can break that out by small, medium, and larger businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, believe it or not, we seem to find your smaller groups seem to be doing a lot more on the business acquisition side. I don't know what's driving that over the last 6 or 7 months, but we seem to be doing a lot of inquiries on business acquisitions. We have all of your traditional stuff. You know, apartments seem to be a good product right now. A lot of inquiries on that. Storage units. A lot of commercial construction. People have been sitting on commercial land for a while. Even though construction costs are up, they are starting to stabilize a little bit. So you're finding a lot of folks starting to build on their properties. And a lot of them are, I'd say, probably a mixed bag, owner-occupied versus versus investment. As we all know, rental rates are up, and that's no different on the residential or commercial side. So where possible, folks that have been sitting on dirt are starting to build and occupy themselves and try to save that rental expense. So... yeah, just a wide range of products right now. SBA seems to be still a hot thing right now. 7A program usually only requires about a 10% injection, so it gives the people an opportunity to kind of hang on to a good portion of their cash if they're looking to make an acquisition or something. And SBA is always a good route to go as well.
So when you say acquisitions, I mean, are you seeing this as being big fish coming in and swallowing up little fish, or is it, you know, smaller businesses that are kind of consolidating and trying to get more,
what do you call it? Economies of scale?
Economies of scale. That's what I was looking
for. Yeah. You know, it's probably all over the range a little bit. You do find companies that are trying to grow a little bit. You know, the number one challenge that I think any employer has right now is still the employers, right? Trying to find skill sets, trying to find employees, the hiring process these days is a lot tougher. But nonetheless, you're finding companies that are looking to grow. You're finding folks that maybe have been in an industry for quite some time and now want to kind of venture off and do it for themselves. So those scenarios seem to be more prevalent right now. I would say probably in the last 6 months, we've been fortunate enough to do about 5 or 6 acquisitions, and I would say the majority of those have been, husband and wife team, maybe a couple of partners coming together and buying an existing footprint, a lot of turnkey type stuff right now. Dental practices seem to be a hot thing right now. A lot of dental facilities selling and being acquired. So that seems to be nice. But yeah, just kind of a broad range of folks looking to either purchase a brand new facility or an expansion. And again, that's whether it's large, small, medium, kind of all the same.
I think that's great, though. To me, that's part of the American spirit. You know, even when things get tough, we're still out there building and looking at the future. I really love that. So it sounds like...
Yeah, and it's one of the programs we love doing because there's a lot of satisfaction.
Right.
It's a lot of work. Business plans and projections and all those things become part of the package. But in the end, to see somebody be able to acquire something that they really want and get started on their own is pretty rewarding.
That's great. So it sounds like it's still a good time to be purchasing and refinancing commercial properties, even with these higher rates.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I tell folks, you know, rates are higher. They are tougher to qualify. I mean, your money doesn't go as far as it used to, as far as, you know, there's ratios that have to be met. And there's so many programs out there that can help folks that are a little bit tight on the income side. But in the end, you want to make sure it's something that's viable, something that you can afford. Because as we all know, as business owners, you certainly have good cycles and you have troubling cycles. So then you always got to be prepared for those cycles when they start to decrease.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, we do a good job of vetting cash flows and making sure that all scenarios are a good deal for all parties. We certainly don't want to do anything that's going to put somebody in a bad situation 6, 12, 18 months after a purchase or a refinance or whatever the case is.
So, Rob, we're coming up on a quick break, but real quickly, how do the higher interest rates impact the ability for people to qualify for a loan?
Well, that's the challenge because, you know, again, you know, everything is so full doc. Full doc basically means your typical, you know, tax returns, personal financial statements, you know, bank statements, the whole gamut of documents that needs to be provided. And then, of course, the idea is that your ratios fall within guidance, depending on the product
right.
that you're going for.
Yep.
But today we have different programs, bank statement programs, asset-only programs.
Okay.
Those kinds of things that we can do, and we can talk about those.
Yeah, we have to back out. We got a 2-minute break, and we'll be right back with Rob Covarrubias of Cova Lending. This is Protecting What Matters.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Rich Dennison. 34 Senate seats are up for grabs in today's midterm elections, along with all 435 House seats. Officials in Florida are telling the Justice Department that federal election monitors are not welcome and will not be permitted at polling places.
They tell the DOJ that even if federal observers were to be considered law enforcement, the state statute forbids it unless there is evidence of problems.
Fox's Eben Brown in Atlanta. In Tampa, rather. Only one ticket matched all five numbers and the Powerball in last night's delayed drawing.
California Lottery announcing Tuesday that the winning Powerball jackpot ticket was sold at Joe's Service Center in Altadena. That ticket matching 10, 33, 41, 47, and 56, with the Powerball 10 to score a record prize of over $2 billion.
Fox's Matt Napolitano. America's listening to Fox News.
So you tested positive for COVID. What's next? Treat yourself. COVID treatments like Paxlovid are free. Taken by pill, these medications can stop the illness from getting serious. So treat yourself. Call a healthcare provider or the statewide COVID hotline at 833-422-4255 to find free treatment today. Again, that's 833-422-4255. Brought to you by the California Department of Public Health.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Rob Covarrubias, president of Cova Lending. The KPRL call-in numbers for questions is 805-238-5775. That's 238-KPRL. So Susan's got one last question for you on the commercial lending, Rob, and then we're going to head into residential.
Okay.
So in the commercial lending business, where does business valuation and life insurance fit into that whole process?
This is a topic near and dear to our heart,
Susan. So typically, those two components will fit in nicely with an SBA product. Most SBA loans, 7A loans, 504s, they usually require some kind of life insurance coverage from the principals. Also on the SBA, you typically use SBA quite often when you're doing a business acquisition. And of course, in the business evaluation is also something that can be required. You can also see it on the conventional side. It really just kind of depends on the size of the company that is being acquired, a lot of different components of the company. So the more complicated, the bigger, the larger, then, of course, the more relevant a business evaluation is needed. Sometimes when it's a little smaller, a little mom-and-pop operation maybe, sometimes you can get away without having to do a business evaluation. But more often than not, it's something that's part of the package that has to be done.
Well, when somebody, let me just do a follow-up question on that. When somebody's either buying or selling a business, I mean, how do they come up with their valuation if they don't do a business valuation?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Barry, too. You know, there's a lot of different components that go into an evaluation. Obviously, some of the main points is obviously the historical income of the company that's being acquired is a huge component of it, along with its FF&Es. Right, some of its assets, those kinds of things. Some companies come with a number of assets, you know, equipment and whatnot. So that obviously plays a big part in the evaluation. But the number one driving force of what people are interested to know is what's this company generating revenue wise, and what are the projections for the future? Right. So,
yes.
Income is a big proponent of it. Usually, they'll use a couple of years of historical income information to kind of dial that in and kind of figure out, you know, what's this company really worth based on its income historically and its assets.
Right. Well, great. Those are great answers, Rob. So let's move on to the residential lending space. Can you give us the big picture of what's driving the current spike in residential mortgages and also HELOC rates?
Yeah, so, you know, as everybody knows, again, interest rates are up quite dramatically. The 30-year fixed is averaging a little over 7%, all closer to 7.5%. And I think one of the confusions out there is that, you know, folks look at the market in general and kind of dictate whether or not the market goes up or down if that's what's going to make the interest rates change. To put this in very simple layman terms, it's really the bond market that drives mortgage rates. As bond prices go up, mortgage interest rates go down, and then the vice versa happens, right? So, yes, the market, inflation, the Feds, all of those things impact mortgage rates. But if you really want to get a good idea of what's happening with mortgage rates in general, it's really the bond market that drives that.
Okay.
And it's in reverse. Bond market goes up, mortgage goes down.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
So as bond prices go up, mortgage rates go down, and vice versa. Exactly.
See, that's news to me. That's a new bit of information I did not know. It must be tough to do refinancing right now. I know we took advantage of that back in the days when it was good. But how do you help people access equity in their homes in this environment we're in?
Hey, you know, we have a call coming in. Let's take it.
Okay.
I don't mess this up. Welcome to Protecting What Matters. Who we got on the line?
Hi, my name is Ken.
Hey, Ken. What's your question for Rob or Susan or I?
It's for Rob. Is he on the line now?
He is. Whoops. I think I just disconnected him.
Uh-oh.
Oh, okay. Hey, Rob, this is Ken.
Wait a minute. Hang on. You know what? We lost Rob.
How did that happen?
Oh, boy. I knocked Rob out?
I'm not sure how that happened, but it did. So let's see. Call him back on that line.
Yeah.
These things happen. Hang in there with us, Ken,
sure,
for a moment.
Ken, why don't you go ahead with your question?
Well, as a borrower, I would like to know what would help to streamline a loan to get it completed, what we can do as a borrower, what would help. When you go in and sit down with Rob, and approximately the time frame for a loan for a residential.
Okay.
Just kind of two-part question, you know, what we do when we go in and be prepared.
Right.
And second of all, the approximate time frame.
Okay.
All right. Well, great. I'm going to hopefully Rob will call back in and we'll repeat that question to him. So thanks for
got it. Thank you. Great show.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Ken.
Can we call him? No, I don't think so. So, what would you like to talk about, Susan, while we wait for Rob to call back in?
I cannot answer Ken's question, I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, my guess is, Ken, I mean, from, you know, having gone through many, you know, lending situations. Oh, Rob is calling back, so hang on. Rob, you there? Rob? Well, I'm sorry, folks. We're having some technical difficulties, but we will roll it. Ken, I'm going to try to...
Yeah, we got our...
We're going to take this other call here. Welcome to Protecting What Matters. This is Barry. Who we got on the line? Hello? Hello?
It's one of those days.
Okay. Sorry, folks. Anyway, you know, Ken, just from my experience in calling. Welcome to Protecting What Matters. Can I take your call?
Yes, this is Gary Stemper. I'd just like to compliment Rob for all his
integrity
and good lending. I've been investing with him, and I'm really pleased.
That's great.
I just want to compliment him.
Thank you so much. We're just having all kinds of technical problems. We lost Rob. Is he back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Hang on, please, for just a moment.
Rob, you with us?
I'm there, Barry.
Sorry about that. Well, Gary Stemper just called to thank you. I don't know if you heard that.
Oh.
And we
for
had,
all the great work you've done.
We had a great call from Ken. Obviously, we have to improve our phone answering capabilities here. But Ken's question was, what can you do before you get all the loan stuff? What can you do to streamline the loan process?
Yeah.
Whether it's commercial or residential.
That's a really
He's talking
good,
about residential.
That's a really
but,
good
yeah.
question.
Let's focus on residential, I think, is what Ken was interested in.
On the residential side?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like what documents
so,
and all that?
Really simply put, if we take a quick glance at tax returns, usually 2 years tax returns are required on a conventional residential loan. If we take a look at those tax returns, kind of get an idea of what your debt is and your credit score, we can kind of back into the numbers and make a quick assessment on what it's going to take to get it done. And then from there, we can certainly, if we're able to proceed, then we go ahead and build the package and get it submitted. So that's a great question because we can save a lot of time and effort by just looking at some very high level, quick documents and really save somebody a lot of time. Because if we can't go full doc, they call it, then there's certainly other avenues that we can try to approach.
And the other part, if someone came in with their complete 2 years of tax returns, Ken's other question was about how long might it take to go through the process?
Yeah, so on the residential side, owner-occupied, even investment, we're averaging usually 30 days or less. On the commercial side, you'll typically find that we're somewhere around 45 to 60, just depending on what exactly we're trying to put together. SBA is about 60 days, and then you go down from there. But on the residential side, definitely most escrows are 30 days, especially on purchases. So we typically don't have any issues meeting that requirement.
Great.
So, you know, you were mentioning to me when for our show prep here, you know, that you're doing quite a bit more now with HELOCs to get people access to some home equity. At least on a variable basis. But I remember back in 2008 and 2009, you know, during the mortgage meltdown, folks were using their homes as personal ATM machines. Property values then plummeted and they found themselves upside down. How can people avoid this risk in today's market?
Yeah, you know, again, a lot of that starts on the front end. When we vet something, we're always cautious to make sure that this is something that's viable, that we're not getting somebody into hot water. So we do see an uptick in home equity line requests, folks trying to gain some of the equity that's in their homes now. What you're finding sometimes right now is where you could typically get up to 80%, with your first and then the new second, up to 80% of your value. We're finding that a lot of resources are starting to drop that percentage down a little bit, which that alone can help protect quite a few folks. So instead of lending maybe a max of 80%, maybe they're lending a max of 70% or 65%. So that's a good little protective feature. But we do see an increase in equity lines right now. So And even with the increased rates, one of the things we do also is when we cash flow that, we don't cash flow it just based on the interest-only payment, which is usually the minimum requirement on an equity line. We definitely cash flow it at a principal and interest type scenario, because that's what happens. That a lot of times when they start to roll into a principal and interest type scenario, that's when the sticker shock happens. Is all of a sudden, you know, $1,000 payment turns into $2,500.
Right.
And that's what can get people in trouble a little bit. So we try to put all those safety features in at the beginning during the analysis side,
right,
just to make sure that it's a good positive thing for the applicant.
That makes real sense, because that was a lot of the problem around the 2008 meltdown, right? Because people were getting into all these loans on the low side, just paying interest, and then they weren't really ready for the principal plus interest payment, if I understand it right, and I might not. Yeah.
Right. Well, that was a big factor. One of the other big factors back then was a lot of stated income type products, where literally people were stating, you know, I make $20,000 a month, when the reality was it was right, half that or even less than that.
Oh, wow.
So I think that was a huge driver back then. And you don't see a lot of stated income type products these days.
You wouldn't think. Yeah. You would hope they learned something.
And I want to just go back to, you know, just real quickly to Ken's question again. I wanted to make the comment that, you know, Rob, having worked with you now for, you know, many years, you are a whiz when it comes to dealing with self-employed people and with their own businesses, because of how tax returns are filed by our CPA. So you are an absolute whiz when it comes to that aspect of things.
Do you have any tips or hints for people about that?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Barry. Yeah, I mean, it just comes from years of experience. Again, it's all about not wasting the applicant's time. I mean, there's different approaches you can do when you're putting a loan package together, trying to qualify somebody for a particular product or an acquisition of some sort, whether it's a building or a business. And just getting the right information at the initial start of it is key to anything. So you get the right information, so you're doing the right analysis. And then once the analysis is done, you can then turn around and find out what the best product for them is, not just in the short term, but in the long term. As you know, Barry, yes, I won't disclose anything. I've reviewed your financials, and they are as complicated as they come. And unless you understand how things flow, because a lot of folks have, especially sophisticated owners,
yep,
they may have corporations entwined with LLCs, entwined with personally, you have trust and all these other things.
Yep.
And you know, you got, you know,
Rob,
different K-1s, so everything, yep, just, you got to figure out how everything flows. Do that.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, we got the music.
We got a hard break.
The music is running us over. So how can people get a hold of you?
So 805-610-6194 is my cell, and that's the best way, or at robertc@covalending.com.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to have you back on as time permits. So thank you so much.
Thanks,
for being,
Rob,
with us. All right.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Connell McShane. This is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending higher for a third straight session as investors focus on the midterm elections. Tech and materials companies were among the gainers today, while the price for Bitcoin fell to the lowest level in 2 years after Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange, is intending to acquire rival FTX. The decision comes on the heels of cryptocurrency companies and individual traders pulling money from FTX over concerns about financial stability. And shares of Lyft tumbled 22% after the ride-sharing company said its third-quarter revenue growth slowed and the number of people using its service remained below pre-pandemic levels. The Dow winners, Amgen, Boeing, and United Health Group. The Dow decliners, Walgreens Boots Alliance, and Disney, which will be releasing earnings after the closing bell. The Dow rising 334 points, the Nasdaq up 52, S&P 500 up 21. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Democrats predicted an end to high inflation, but nothing has changed. In fact, food and housing prices are still going higher. Hi, this is Stephen K. Bannon, and I urge you to protect your savings from inflation by diversifying into a physical gold IRA from Birch Gold Group. To see how it works, simply text the word SHELTER to 989898, and you'll get a free info kit on gold IRAs that will explain everything. Again, that's Shelter to 989898. There's no obligation or purchase required.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane sales and service since 1936. Each year, the pre-buy program allows Delta Liquid Energy customers the ability to pre-purchase their expected winter requirements at traditionally discounted pricing. Call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go to deltaliquidenergy.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Hammond Overhead Door Company has known for over 50 years that you have a choice when it comes to garage door services. That's why they utilize only the finest garage door materials and equipment, and their fleet of fully equipped service vehicles are ready to serve your maintenance and repair needs quickly and efficiently. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters with Blaze and Bear. The KPRL call-in number is 805-238-5775. Our next topic is funding your long-term care needs. What's your plan? Bear, you've done a lot of research on long-term care issues over the years. What's jumping out at you right now that may help our listeners do a better job of planning for the costly risk of needing long-term care?
Well, I think, again, this goes back to the whole issue, Susan, of the financial literacy aspect of what we're trying to get across here. And, you know, and what we're hoping to get across in this segment is to talk, this segment and the last segment, is to kind of give you an idea of how various different ways you can pay for your long-term care and see how that ties back into the type of care you want or expect to get when you need it. As you know, Susan, you know, we often, the first line of defense when we talk to a new to folks about long-term care planning is denial. Many think it's not going to happen to them. They think they can, or they can invest their way out of the problem. And I'm just cautioning you, if this is your strategy, I think you need to maybe rethink that a little bit. You know, and I'm not a big statistics guy, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But statistically, the needing long-term care is a high probability event in relationship to most other things that you that'll happen to you, an auto accident, your house burning down. I mean, it's and I'm going to give you a couple of statistics here in a second. But again, this is a high probability event and something that you need to consider on how you're going to pay for it.
I often call myself the professional skunk at the lawn party, because these are the things that nobody really wants to think about. Nobody right. wants to think about not being able to take care of themselves. But it's one of those things that if you think about it ahead of time, you'll be so much better off.
Right. And you're absolutely right, because you'll have choices. You know, it's that care desirability type of thing. But here's my caveat about statistics. And I always say, you know, statistics are what happened to other people. It's a tragedy when it happens to you or someone you care about. Okay. The bottom line, though, is these will give you some guidance as to the high probability of needing care. So the Department of Health Services, part of the federal government, okay, has reported, and I just saw this on an email that I got from somebody this morning, that if you live to age 65, you face a 70% chance of needing long-term care for some duration of time.
Looks like we have a call.
Okay. Let's see if we can take this call without messing it up. Welcome to Protecting What Matters. How can we help you? What's your name?
My name's Don.
Hey, Don. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. How can we help you today?
Well, I'm listening to your program right now, and guys are talking about, you know, health and trying to save money for something.
Right.
Well, I just got my renewal for my health insurance just for myself. It's going to go up to $740 a month. It's like, well, How in the hell can anybody save any money?
Yeah, but it is a problem. And, you know, this is it's a great question, Don. I mean,
yeah. Do you have an agent who helps you with your health insurance? If you do, I think you should contact that person and see if you have other options, because you're right. Health insurance has gotten really expensive too. Right. So that,
who regulates those people?
Well, the regulators are part of the problem. If you want to know the truth, I mean, the health insurance markets are regulated by two entities in the state of California, the Department of Insurance and the Department of Managed Health Care. And a lot of the cost that you are seeing in your health insurance is a result of mandated benefits that over the last 20 or 25 years have been forced upon the insurance companies. Okay, so that and for everybody. So it's not just an optional thing. So you're ending up paying for benefits that you'll never use for other people who want to use it. This has been an ongoing fight that, boy, Susan and I have been involved with for decades now.
And I can even tell a story, because I used to actually run a small health insurance plan right in the heart of Los Angeles. And I went to the Department of Insurance with a very low-cost plan. This is back around 2001, so it's a while ago. But that was stripped down. And had just the basics, especially for like young single people, if you broke a leg or had cancer, had a car accident, it would cover you. But there was not much else to it. And it would be like $60 or $70 a month for a 30-year-old male. And they wouldn't let us do it because we didn't have all the mandates for mental health coverage and chiropractic and who knows all the other 27 things that are in there now. So this is a bit off of our topic, but I'm glad you called. Yeah.
I'm 54 years old.
Yep.
And then my wife and daughter, they're on her plan, and they're like $1,300 a month.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like,
I know, it is. It's nuts right now.
But, you know, anyway, Don, this is a great question. You really need to contact your agent and see what other options you might have available. This is not our area of expert. You know, it's not our area. We don't do medical insurance anymore.
We used to, but not anymore.
This is one of the reasons why we don't do medical insurance anymore, is because it just got to be too hard. But we need to move on with our show. But thanks for the great call, Don. I appreciate it. Okay.
All right.
Anyway, folks, that was a good call, and I'm sure many of you are shaking your head saying that's my life, and it's an issue. It's a big issue. Anyway, going back to the probability of needing long-term care. As I mentioned, 70%, if you make it to age 65, 70% chance that you're going to need long-term care sometime and for some duration. There was also a very interesting article written in Inside Hook. It's one of these online magazines or publications. It has a lot of interesting takes on things, and they cited a study. The article was called America Has a Dementia Problem. They were citing a Columbia University study. It's a longitudinal study, which means it's over 10 or 15 years, and it's got some great information on it. But they were currently saying that currently 10% of Americans age 65 plus have dementia, with an additional 22% who have mild cognitive impairment. And a lot of this has to do with our diets and our lifestyle. The other interesting point that they pointed out, though, is that despite what's happened with COVID making some impact on life expectation, the fact is life expectation is still on the upswing worldwide. In 1990, there were 100,000 people who were 100 plus. Today, by 2050, they're anticipating that there will be 4 million of us, and it could be me too, I don't know. That will be, I don't know if I'll be 100 plus by 2050, but I'll be close, huh? So anyway, let's not do that math, okay? Go to the next question.
So why is this important for individuals who are planning for their care?
Well, clearly, what we're trying to point out is if there's a credible likelihood that we're going to need to have long-term care, we recommend as part of your financial planning that it makes sense for you to think about how much control you want to have over your care destiny. So in other words, it's really important. There are going to be choices to be made when you need long-term care, and you want to have most of the options, as many options available to you as possible. So,
yep. So what is long-term care? Let's just back up for a second, because not everybody even knows what the term means specifically.
So, let's just, you know, a quick refresher. Long-term care are services you or someone you care about receives when they can no longer take care of themselves. Interestingly, the federal government just kind of recast the term to what's called long-term supports and services. But when you see the term LTSS, that's long-term supports and services, it's really synonymous with long-term care. And it can be a wide array of services that'll be paid for. Okay, and these services will include anything from needing to go to a nursing facility or an assisted living facility, to getting care at home, even having somebody come and do your gardening or your laundry or prepare your meals.
Right.
It's a wide range of services.
And I think, you know, it all revolves around some very basic definitions, what are called ADLs, the activities of daily living, which are really basic.
Right.
It's bathing, eating, dressing, continence, toileting, and transferring, meaning can you physically move around the home safely without the danger of falling. So if you can't perform two of those six, that's when you're considered to need long-term care.
Or you're suffering a severe cognitive impairment.
Right.
You know, those are the basic definitions here. But regardless, when you need care, your options are really, there's only a few options on how you're going to pay for that. Either you're going to use your money, you're going to use your insurance, or you're going to use other people's money. And I define other people's money as state and federal government programs and charities. So when we return, because I hear the music coming up again, and again, we appreciate the call-in, so it's okay. We are going to wrap this up and probably roll it into another show even. So stand by. We'll be back.
I don't know what to do.
About what?
My wife wants to remodel the kitchen, but we don't have that kind of money.
Want to see what we did? Take a peek at this.
Wow, that looks great. Who did your remodel?
It's not a remodel. I had Espeak Painting paint our cabinets. Now they're like new, and they're my wife's favorite color.
Espeak Painting, huh?
Yeah, they're local, right here in Atascadero. They're easy to deal with, from the estimate all the way to the final brush stroke. And getting a quote was easy. I did it online. It's way cheaper than a remodel.
Then I better take a peek at this Espeak Painting.
Well, you know what they say, happy wife, happy life.
You got that right.
Take a peek at Espeak Painting and get a beautiful new look for your cabinets without an expensive remodel. Espeak specializes in cabinet painting as well as residential exteriors, interiors, and HOAs. Take a peek at Espeak Painting. Book a quote appointment quickly and easily 24/7 at espeakpainting.com. That's S-P-E-E-K painting.com.
Dove's Paso Soul Food Grill is now open at 14th and Park in Paso Robles. Fresh and flavorful, their food is prepared daily using only the best quality ingredients. Fresh fried chicken made to order from scratch, crab and crawfish bags, and their best-seller catfish. Dove's Paso Soul Food Grill. Everything tastes like a home-cooked meal. Fried green tomatoes, hush puppies, black-eyed peas, cornbread, collard greens, red beans and rice, mac and cheese. It's all authentic home-style food that's good for your soul. Enjoy classic R&B hits on their sound system while dining indoors or out. You can also order online for pickup or relax at home and get great soul food delivered right to your door. See their menu at pasogrill.com. Family owned and operated, they love locals because they are local. Dove's Paso Soul Food Grill. Look for the big Paso Grill sign at 14th and Park.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters with Blaze and Bear.
Call-in number is 805-238-5775. So in our last short segment here, what I would like to do is again, get to the point, I guess, and talk about who pays for long-term care. And it's really quite startling. The total spending for long-term care or long-term supports and services is $475 billion, okay? Of that, Medicaid in California, it's called Medicare. Medi-Cal pays for 42.1% of that. So that's $200 billion is paid for with other people's money. The problem with Medicaid and Medi-Cal is that it's means tested. So in other words, you have to prove that you're unable to pay for yourself. Okay, there are truly people that are truly needy and need these services, but there are also a lot of people. There's a cottage industry of attorneys and other services that will help people get qualified for Medi-Cal. Again, it's not what they're doing is not illegal. There's just a lot of loopholes in this program that allows that.
And it basically involves divesting yourself of most of your assets, right?
Correct.
So that you have no more money left.
Correct.
And then you become a ward of the state.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of stuff done with trusts and that type of thing. But yes, that's what you have to do. Means tested means you have to show that you don't have the income or you don't have the assets to pay for it yourself. Medi-Cal is state administered. And after you die, they will go after and try to recover the benefits that they've paid out for your estate. This is the least control over your destiny, okay, your care destiny.
Right, especially because a lot of those Medi-Cal facilities, most of it is done in a nursing home, and you don't even get to choose which one you're going to be in sometimes because you go where the beds are available, whether it's close to your family or not.
Right, they've tried to shift to some home care services, Susan, but they found that that's costing more than putting people into nursing homes. So
right.
It's creating even more costs for the government. The second thing that a lot of people ask is, well, doesn't Medicare pay for long-term care? Well, the simple fact is it doesn't pay for much long-term care. It's very, very limited. This accounts for $87 billion of the $475 billion that's spent on long-term care services. It's generally post-hospitalization rehab at a skilled nursing facility. You have to have a 3-day prior hospitalization before it'll pay for that. And if your rehab does not show improvement, it's over, you know. And at the very most, it's a 100-day limited benefit.
Right.
Do you have something you wanted to ask?
Nope.
Okay.
That's it.
Other public money, other people's money includes. There was a bunch of COVID relief spent on long-term services. Veterans Administration. Okay, has some services for veterans. Unfortunately, it's kind of like Medi-Cal where it's means tested. And there's a myriad of other state and federal programs, charities, philanthropic, and all that type of stuff.
Okay.
Grand total, by the way, of other people's money, okay, is 77.3% of the total $475 billion, which totals $375 billion. So again, there's a lot of our money being spent
right
to help people in need.
We're calling it other people's money, but it's actually our money because it's the vast majority of these long-term care services are paid by taxpayers, who is us. And sometimes, you know, the very taxpayers don't have the wherewithal to pay for themselves for their own long-term care or didn't plan and figure out a way to get government assistance. And so once again, it's the people in the middle who get hurt the most.
Right.
And the worst part is what you're saying is they don't really have control over the services they receive or where they receive them.
Correct.
So what do you need to do to have the most control over your care destiny?
Right. Well, okay. So real quickly, as we come up on the end of the show here, the next biggest chunk of money spent on long-term care services is personal savings and investments. This accounts for $64 billion of the $475 billion. Okay. And this is money that you've accumulated, individuals have accumulated. It's hard-earned after-tax dollars. And what that means is for you to have that dollar, you've paid taxes on it probably to the tune of 25% or more. Okay, so that dollar that you have is costing you a buck and a quarter already. Okay, and then what happens, the fallacy, the problem with using your own money is you've got these investments, whether it's real estate, whether it's your 401ks, whatever it is, if you are forced to liquidate those assets at a time when you need long-term care, you have shrinkage, okay? Which means it's subject to market forces. So just like now, the market's up and down like crazy. If you needed to tap into it, you could be taking losses. There can be taxes and early withdrawal penalties. And if, of course, if you're relying on your assets to generate income, okay, for your living expenses, you have to liquidate them, you have a loss of income coming into the households for the well spouse. So the bottom line is you're using after-tax dollars, plus you're getting probably about 30% shrinkage when you have to liquidate those assets. other self-funding solutions, just so you know, and we'll probably do a show on these at some point in time. Reverse mortgages are becoming very, very popular.
Right.
And life settlements, which is where if you have a life insurance policy you no longer need, and if it's the right kind of policy, you can sell the future value of that life insurance policy to an institutional buyer and get cash. But this is the next big piece of where people are paying for their long-term care. And of course, I'll just close up on this, and then we'll talk about next week's show, is you can consider private insurance. Okay, again, this is long-term care insurance. We'll unpack that some more. It is Long-Term Care Insurance Awareness Month. The benefits are generally tax-free, and in certain circumstances, the premiums are tax-deductible. Now, at this point, this still amounts to less than 10%. It's only 7.8% of all long-term care expenses are paid for with private insurance because of the reluctance that people have in doing this sort of plan.
But I will say, but there's nothing talking about having control of your care destiny. When you do have an insurance policy, like my mom did, we got to choose exactly where she was going to be. She got great care and was in the place that she wanted. And so having the funds through one of those vehicles you mentioned or through a private insurance policy gives you the most control over the care you're going to need when you need it.
Absolutely. So basically, you know, whether you believe it or not, most people will confront a long-term care event sometime in their life. And your care destiny will be determined by what your plan looks like. So making a plan is very important. Anyway, well, that wraps up our exciting and eventful show today. next week, we have David Wood, CEO of San Luis Obispo Caregivers, on Caring for Aging Parents at Home. And Susan Blaze is going to regale us in another one of her great topics, something I hear about all the time, keys to successful aging. Folks, you've been great. Thanks for the call. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to talking to you tomorrow to help you protect what matters.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters with Barry Fisher and Susan Blaze. Send your questions and show topic ideas to Barry@blazeandbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's